All right, we'll call our meeting to order. This is the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. So if that isn't where you think you are, you're in the wrong room. We have, today it's Dairy Day. Our dairy folks are here, and they're all wearing labels, so you can all meet them and understand, try and pronounce their names. Welcome to everyone. First thing, before we get into it, Representative Faust moves approval of the minutes from February 4th. Are there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Basically, members, what we have today, and remember, we have coffee up front if anyone wants it to go with the cheese, but I see they brought some, someone brought some cheese along. That's a good thing. This is the Ag Committee. We want food, and so either grab it or maybe just pass the bowl around to begin with, and then we'll put it back there, and anyone who wants cheese, help yourself. And thank you to whoever brought that in. We appreciate that. Basically, we're just going to let folks go through. We've got four or five people. There's someone else that wants to come up and talk as it's going and feel and need to say something, by all means, talk to the pages up there, and they'll get your name for us. The other thing we're going to ask some of the milk producers or the co-op folks or others, as you know in our budget book, we'll be going through in detail a lot of these divisions, but I would just point out for your edification, you know, page 16 talks about the cuts in the dairy development program, talks about our livestock investment grants. Page 21 talks about dairy reinspection fees. There's going to be an additional fee charged to dairies for reinspection. And page 27 has a summary of everything. So we'd like people, our dairy testifiers, especially the producers, to weigh in on that, what your opinion is of cutbacks of the dairy development program in particular and the reinspection fees. And we'll have opportunities for testimony as we do our budgets too, but I figure as long as we're here, let's touch base on some of that. So, unless there's any questions, I'll get Kurt Zimmerman moving towards the front here. Kurt is from the Department of Agriculture, and of course we wanted to start maybe a little overview from our own department on what they see for dairy out in Minnesota and what's going on, and any information they can provide us and background and on and on and on. So, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today. It's definitely an honor to be with this many dairy producers, some of our key stakeholders at the Department of Agriculture. My role at the Department of Ag is as a livestock development supervisor. I'm also a facilitator for a statewide group called the Dairy Profitability Advisory Committee, made up of processors. Many of the members of that committee are here today, and it's been a very worthwhile group to have participating in some of the issues of dairy. Just a quick note on dairy prices and profitability. You'll be hearing from that specifically from our producers the representatives of our dairy industry here today. I just want to just touch on dairy prices because it's a huge issue if I'm going to give an overview of the state's dairy industry. But the last time we saw prices at the levels we currently have was in 2002-2003. And I had Dave Winant from our office take a look at what the feed prices were back in that same time period to kind of get a comparison of where we are today in comparison of what the producers that are milking our cows were paying for feed, and it's almost exactly half of what it is today. If corn is roughly $4 a bushel, it was around $2.15 to $2.20 a year ago. If beans are $9 or $10 a bushel today, they were about $5 or $5.25 the last time we had milk prices. So there's some real struggles and profitability issues that our industry is facing, and you'll be hearing about some of those challenges. If I were to give you just a Reader's Digest overview of where our state's dairy industry is, we're very blessed in our state of Minnesota to have a strong dairy industry, and for the fourth year in a row, our producers increased more milk than they did the year before. So we've had four successive years where milk production has actually gone up. In 2008, we had an increase of just under 2% for the year. If you're to look at our milk production over the last 5 years, our milk production has gone up over 6% in the state of Minnesota, and that's remarkable. Our milk producers account for about 5% of the milk that is marketed in the United States. That is almost identical to what it was in 2002 when we had prices at the levels I just talked about. We're the sixth largest milk-producing state in the U.S. We're behind California, Wisconsin, New York, Idaho, and Pennsylvania. At the end of 2008, Minnesota reported under just 4,800 dairy farms, 4,800. We had a decrease in the state of around 150 from the previous year. The average herd size of the people in this room and across the state that milk cows is around 97 cows per herd, and that is an increase of about 2 to 3 cows per herd over a year ago. And we've seen that gradual increase here over the last while. Milk production per cow, a real success story of what these people are doing with the new technology and nutrition and the know-how they have. We increased milk production per cow in the state of Minnesota, 60 pounds per cow, and that is another nice increase, 18,880 pounds per cow per year. A little word about dairy exports in Minnesota, another success story. It's a big part of our industry, and it's one that at the Department of Agriculture we're working very hard on. It's going to be very difficult this year to match the 11% of U.S. exports dairy milk that went into milk solids that went into exports of last year. Minnesota is the fifth largest dairy exporter in the country. During the last 10 years, exports increased an average of 10%. Last year, dairy exports for Minnesota actually increased 30%. Now, that will not be repeated in 2009, but exports are a huge part of the dairy industry in Minnesota. What's the economic impact of the people in this room and those 4,800 dairy farms? You know, we throw out numbers about the billion-dollar industry and the number of people employed. We had a program this past year that many of you were very responsible for, and Representative Junkie has been a very strong supporter and members on this committee, and that was the Dairy Investment Grant Program, the Livestock Investment Grant Program. I wanted to give you just a quick snapshot view of what we were able to find out in that program this past year. I was one of the people that were involved in reviewing some of the 575 applications that came in for the program. We had around 370 of those that were dairy operations across the state of Minnesota, about two-thirds, 64%. $150 million in total livestock investments were applied in the applications. That's a big number, and we sure didn't get everyone that made improvements to their livestock operations applied. So I don't know what percentage we have, but we know of $150 million that were involved in the investment part of our livestock operations. Almost $90 million was spent by dairy farmers in the state of Minnesota. That's a big number. We're not talking about the livestock or any land purchases. This is all depreciable assets. That $90 million came from dairy. The $90 million was made up of equipment purchases of $23 million, building and facilities, $57 million, and fencing and pasture management, another million and a half. You know, we can talk about the implied value and the direct and the indirect value of dairy in the state of Minnesota. Here's a sampling of who receives those millions of dollars and who gets that money. Is it somebody off farm or in the Twin Cities here or other states? I took a look at a handful of the applications on my desk this week. Here's some people that received some of those millions of dollars that was reported by the application. Anderson Brothers Supply at Staples, Keene Brothers Construction of Lismore, Schwalk Case Hardware and Sibley Hardware did business with our dairy industry, Urban Well Company in Olivia, Chapman Building in Worthington, Dairyland Supply in Sauk Center, Hartung Sales in Freeport, Minnesota, Champion Electric in Painesville, Modern Farm Equipment in Sauk Center, and the list goes on and on and on. What it told us very clearly is not only a big number that's hard to get our hands on, but what impact the dairy producers in the state of Minnesota really have on their rural and local communities. And it's really an honor for us at the Department of Ag to be part of today, Dairy Day at the Capitol, and part of this industry, where you have the townships and the counties in Minnesota that welcome livestock, and in particular dairy, to their areas, and what type of an impact they're receiving from these people in the room today. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions, members, for the department? Some of those numbers would be good to get in written form. If you could get those to us, Kurt, or Mr. Zimmerman, and email them to us. We'll share them with people, the number of farms, the average size, all the things you gave us. And obviously, we want to hear from our producers more on it, too, but I speak for myself, but I think for the committee, too, that we're very concerned that we're not putting the investment into the livestock investment grants this year. After establishing the program, we know at 150, if we funded everything, that's about $15 million we could have used in that program. I think our estimates were between $8 and $10 million when we first did it. So a lot of those applications also come forward, do they not? If they're a good application last year, they're a good application this year. Isn't that the way it was handled?
I think the way the law is written, those that had qualifying expenditures that would qualify for a program and weren't funded receive priority in coming years. And how we're able to implement that, we will still need some direction for that. I can report that people are already calling the Department of Ag and asking about the 2009 program. I had two calls from dairymen yesterday in southern and southeast and southwestern Minnesota asking when they could apply for the next program. So despite prices like you'll be hearing about today, people are already asking about the program for next year.
Well, and I think that's why this program is more critical this year than it was last year. As prices are down and folks are looking for assistance to upgrade those facilities. So, and again, members, I'll repeat, the governor's asking for, I believe, $50 million in tax credits for small Main Street businesses. And like I've told our farm groups out there, I think they're our best small Main Street business out there are our farms. And they certainly are a business. We know that when you invest in that operation, you're probably bringing someone else in, perhaps, to work on the farm. And like you mentioned, I like your list because you're buying things locally. So that money is getting right out in the community, probably creating jobs, the whole shot that we're looking for. So, you know, rather than wait for people to collect tax credits, I think we should snag $10 million of that $50 and put it towards dairy investment grants and livestock investment grants. So that's what I'm going to be pushing for within our leadership corner, and I suspect Hamilton and Magnus and others will be whispering in their leadership ear, too, and hopefully we can all get that message to the governor. So any questions? Yes, I think most of those businesses were in your district, Representative Anderson. I got that money, so
good to hear those numbers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Kurt, good to see you. He hails from my area back at the Chicago, Minnesota. Good to see you, Kurt. You talked about production being up. So what about actual cow numbers statewide in Minnesota?
The export?
Well, numbers of cows. Have the number of cows stayed stable or gone up or down?
I apologize for not mentioning that. Our cow numbers are also up. We have 465,000 cows. I think the actual number, I think that the last count was maybe 467. So our cow numbers are also up. We have a very unique state in that we have all sizes. We have small, medium, large. We have a very diverse industry, but we've been able to actually increase cow numbers even though we've lost about 165 dairy farms over the last year. So cow numbers and cow production per cow are up.
Very good. All right, if there's no more questions for the department, we'll move on. And we have David Ward with the Co-op Network is on the list next. For those of you that don't know, I'll snitch on him. Mr. Ward used to be a legislator over in Wisconsin, of all places, next door. So he brings some experience from our neighbor to the east. We appreciate that. But he works here in this state as well as Wisconsin, and you're always welcome here at this committee. So please introduce yourself and proceed.
I'm David Ward with the Cooperative Network, and thank you, Chairman Junkie, for blowing my cover. So, But the Cooperative Network is a two-state trade association that represents the cooperative interests in both Wisconsin and Minnesota. Prior to last November, we had two separate organizations, two separate boards of directors, and decided we kind of came together 5 years ago, so we decided last November, let's finish the deal and get under one name. But it's appropriate that the two states of Wisconsin and Minnesota get together long before Governor Pawlenty and Governor Doyle decided it would be a good idea to work together. Co-ops in both states have been working together. We're the number one, Minnesota is the number one cooperative state in the country with probably about around 1,000 co-ops serving about 3 million Minnesota citizens, and 90% of the milk produced in Minnesota is marketed through a cooperative. First of all, I want to thank the members here today and the members of the entire Minnesota legislature for some of the successes we've had in the past. The Livestock Investment Grant Program that Mr. Zimmerman talked about was something that agriculture, co-ops, Minnesota Milk, and the other farm organizations had worked on for a number of years. And I think the successes of the program speak for themselves, that there was a demand for a program like that. And what the program has meant, I think, shows that you were on the right track and did the right thing and created the Livestock Investment Grant Program. Over 570 applications. Unfortunately, the dollars are only there to fund 38 of those applications. And so, but I think it helps more than just livestock and the dairy industry. As Mr. Zimmerman pointed out with his list of vendors that have benefited from it, it's helped create jobs in rural Minnesota and in Main Street Minnesota. It's added to the property values of those communities. The local governments have benefited by the additional investments made in their areas and added to their property values. And I commend the Department of Ag for tracking those results, because we have a similar program on the other side of the river where they know it's done a good job of creating investment in the dairy industry, but they have no idea what the ripple effects of those investments are. So it's great that the Minnesota Department of Ag has tracked the results. Another issue that I would like to thank you for is the milk truck waste exemption. For so many years, we enjoyed an exemption that sunsetted in June of 2008, and milk trucks in Minnesota were faced with the issue of do we obey the state law or do we obey the federal rule? And I think that we have an exemption now for milk trucks in the state of Minnesota from the spring load restrictions is a step in a positive direction to help serve the dairy farmers out there in rural Minnesota. Issue that we'll be working on this upcoming legislative session, and it's not a new issue, it's that of permitting. I think we need a permitting process in Minnesota that protects the environment, protects Minnesota's natural resources, but it's probably more clear and consistent for the producers and the local units of government that have to go through permitting larger animal agriculture operations. And hopefully it'll be a permitting process that's designed to allow the industry, the animal agriculture industry, to grow in Minnesota, because I think we've seen the benefits to Minnesota when that industry does grow. Another issue that will be at the forefront is the cost share program. The feedlot rules that were passed years ago kind of have taken a lot of the larger producers that had to be permitted, and they're in compliance. Now we're left with how do we get the remainder of the producers to be in compliance with the feedlot rules, so they are also helping to protect the Minnesota's environment. So the cost share dollars to that program are vital. So those are some of the things that we will be working on. Again, thank you for your help for the programs in the past. They've been very beneficial to animal agriculture and the dairy industry in Minnesota, and I look forward to going through the struggles that to helping you go through the struggles that you'll be facing with it. I know it's tough budgetary time. One of my jobs in Wisconsin, I was vice chair of the budget writing committee, so I know what, unfortunately, I know what deficits are. It's a lot more when you have surpluses. So hopefully you'll make the right steps this session to build the surplus that you can help build Minnesota in the future.
Well, thank you. I have a couple of questions, and then we'll go to others too. As long as you work with Minnesota, Wisconsin, can you just give us a broad brush on where Wisconsin's at with their dairy investment tax credit? We didn't make this up other than making it a grant program here in Minnesota. We kind of looked to you. Just tell us, when did it start there, and does it continue today, and has it expanded into other areas? Just give us an idea what's going on with that.
It started, I think, in 2005 was the first year the tax credits were given out. $13 million in tax credits the first year, and it's grown. The Department of Ag in Wisconsin estimates that it's probably about $500 million improvements to dairy facilities. Since then, it's expanded to other livestock. The grant program was sunset in 2010, and so there will be a similar debate in Wisconsin as to what should we continue the dairy investment tax credit in Wisconsin. We have a carry forward our tax credits. If you don't use all tax credits in 1 year, you have up to 15 years to use it. So there will still be dollars going into the tax credit program because of the carry forward provision. But unfortunately, we did not track what it meant to rural Wisconsin, to the investments made in the communities, the way that Minnesota did. But, the results, I think, in Wisconsin speak for themselves. Cow numbers are up from years and years of declining cow numbers. They're up. Production is up. If things stay the same, which is kind of iffy because of the pricing situation, we will be at an all-time high in milk production in 2009 in Wisconsin of over 25 million pounds of milk.
Have you seen their budget recommendations this year for that program?
Fortunately, I'm going to really keep like putting them on the spot here. But the tax credit is still in place, and so they have not. One of the things they did do with the livestock investment tax credit is they capped it. But with the dairy investment tax credit, it was not capped, and so it's still in place. They will probably one of the issues that will come up in Wisconsin is whether or not to renew it.
Okay. Second question, can you give me some specific examples of permitting problems that you'd like to see addressed?
I think it's more, there's probably producers out there that could give you a specific example of what happened to them, but I think it's more in general. We need to create a process so when a producer goes in to wanting to expand, and most of these, keep in mind, most of these producers want to expand, to bring the next generation back to the family. They're all mostly family farms. It's not what people like to portray as the large factory farms or whatever, but these are all family farms in Minnesota. And I think they would enjoy a more predictable, that I know going into it, I get my business plan, I line up my financing, I have an application, I know if I cross all the T's and dot all the I's on the application, that I am fairly assured that there will be light at the end of the tunnel. I think too many times now they go through that process and then a roadblock comes up three quarters of the way through. I think a more consistent, a more predictable model would be helpful, and a more consistent model. So farmers in one county in Minnesota have one set of rules, and farmers in another county have another set of rules. I think those are some of the challenges that we face.
One of the things that came up in my county, and see if this works across the state and what you think of it, folks going out to get livestock permits would like to proceed with the local permitting and get the blessing from the townships or the counties at their thing, and then be done with that ahead of time while they wait for their permit, so that they don't have to wait 6, 8, whatever months for the permit, and now start the local process, if they can do that ahead of time, with it being contingent on the state approval of things. Would that be something that would help?
I think anything to speed the process up would help, and sometimes another issue is more defined timelines. Too many times they will say, well, we didn't have a hearing this month on your permit, we'll wait till next month. Once you submit an application, if there's a more defined timeline, I think that helps in at least you know the answer. You may not like the answer, but at least you know that on date certain you're going to get an answer.
And maybe our producers will weigh in when they come to. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask. And in many cases, what you run into when you have that moving target, it becomes a de facto moratorium because it's based on inaction, and the producer never knows what information they're supposed to submit because it's always changing.
My question, you talked a little bit about 70-20 feedlot rules, and the producers needn't come in compliance. I did sign on to a bill that would extend that compliance date for animal units under 300. Can you comment on that a little bit? Do your producers support that?
Not having told them, the concern is with our producers is that we have a deadline that's approaching. We have a program that will help producers come in compliance with that deadline, but they're going to need some dollars to in the program to help them come in compliance. So either dollars or some easing up on that deadline, I think would they would support. But it's you got two things, two dynamics. You got a deadline, and you've got a need for some money in the program to help producers come in compliance.
Representative Hamill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ward, would you please poll your producers? Could you poll them and sure. See what they're thinking on that? Because as everybody knows, the budget is tight, and the fear of not having any money to fund programs such as that is very, very real. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'd feel more comfortable if I knew where your producers stood. And then because there's going to be some opposition, because I believe we asked for an extension once before. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if you could do that and get back to us, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'll get the email out when I get back to my office.
And I think what we're also looking for feedback, some of the discussion I've heard is giving an extension for upgrading and coming into compliance, but does that necessarily mean that you still don't have to register the feedlot? And I think that maybe is the middle ground, to say you still have to register, but then we give you more time for compliance so that we know the feedlots are out there, we get an idea on the demand and what we're looking for, as opposed to people waiting till the end and this being a reason not to register the feedlot. So I think that's some of the discussion that's going on, at least from folks and agencies that have come to my office. So. Anything else for Mr. Ward? All right, thank you for coming. We appreciate your testimony. We have Minnesota milk producers next, however they want to proceed. Here they come. Welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself and proceed in any way you see fit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Luneman. I am a dairy farmer from Todd County, Representative Wakremba's district. So I bring greetings from home today, Mary Ellen. And I'm also currently serving as the president of Minnesota Milk Producers. I'm here today to give you an overview of the dairy industry. Mr. Chairman, you asked us that we give you what the outlook is, what we're going through currently. And so I'd like to do that. Before I get into that, I want Chairman Junkie, you passed around the cheese. I want you to know that was courtesy of Minnesota Milk Producers and Land O'Lakes, and to tell everyone here that you're all welcome to the bowl down here up front.
All right. Thank you.
The existing dairy situation in the state of Minnesota and across the United States is we are in a crisis at the moment. It's created by what I would call a perfect storm. Dairy producers are pretty good at what they do, and so we had rising milk production, not only in Minnesota but across the United States, which, you know, we're trying to feed the people of the world. And then we have the economic situation that we have. Currently we have reduced consumption, and this is only like a 1-2% issue. Exports are down. The dollar, if you can believe it or not, is actually stronger compared to what it was a year ago at this time. And with the banking crisis, we have buyers of our product that can't get credit to put the inventories in their warehouses like they would like to have. And this is not only in the United States, but this is a world issue as well. So you have all of those factors coming together where you've got a slightly reduced consumption, a little bit of extra supply, and all of a sudden our milk prices are now down at or below the government support price. I think this is different than previous low periods we were in, because our expenses in the last 2 years, for sure in the last few, have risen dramatically. Our feed costs are much higher than they used to be, and if you look at charts over the last 10, 20, 30 years, and I just helped my son with a college presentation, and he was working on this, And it shows you that our commodity prices, corn, beans, bean meal, and the like, are like 50 to 100% higher than they traditionally have been. And so that's something that we just have to get used to in this economy, and so things are somewhat out of whack for our industry right now. When we look at the feed cost for our producers, we have currently have a milk feed ratio of 1.69, which in the history of the milk feed ratio, which started in 1985, it's the lowest milk feed ratio that we have ever experienced. So that is a key issue for us. But our other costs, you know, now our fuel is down after getting really beat up last year. But the other costs have not come down. When you go to town to get supplies, things you need to do repairs, those things are all at a much higher level than they used to be. And it's to the point where our variable costs in producing milk are actually higher right now than what it costs, than what we're getting paid for the milk. So the variable, or what we would maybe call a cash cost, is higher than what we're getting paid. So it gets down to the point of how strong is your balance sheet, who can you pay this month or this week or today? And it's a very, very difficult time. A typical break even for a dairy farmer in Minnesota is in that $15 to $16 area, and currently the price is at $10 or $11. So you can see, if you do the math, it can create a lot of red ink in a hurry.
Mr. Luman, where were you a year ago?
We were near $20, and at times we were over $20. So we are seeing
roughly
about
half. So I'm
going
to put you on the spot here. What's happened to the price of milk in the store in a year? Has it dropped in half?
I don't believe it has.
Thank you. That's an important fact, I think, for us to remember, as we get blamed a lot in agriculture, whether it's ethanol or corn or whatever, for high food prices, but now we're seeing milk basically in half, and I don't believe in the store, Representative Hamilton, it's dropped in half yet.
Mr. Chairman, my family, we purchase 4 to 5 gallons a week, and it has not dropped in half.
We drink a lot of milk, too. That's what was my, I want someone else to say it, though. So,
proceed. Okay. Now, how long will this current environment last? I don't know if any of us know, because we don't know what's going to happen to the economy. I do know that there are serious issues all across the United States. Actually, the Western producers that have had the greatest gains in the last few years are suffering the worst because they have higher feed prices than we do. When we were paying $6 per bushel, they were paying $1 to $2 more than we were. So they've been going through this longer than we have. So it'll be, how many farmers, how many cows will have to leave? Will our markets come back? We don't know. But I just hope that it comes back sooner, because otherwise it's going to inflict a great deal of pain in the countryside.
Can you reflect a little bit on some of the causes internationally? And I'll throw you the softball, but talking to Colin Peterson last week, he was at the Capitol, and he said his economist from the Ag Committee in D.C., basically said, you know, there's a big problem with the whey market. That's a protein source that people like China and other developing and growing countries have been purchasing. They've dropped back on those purchases, but their summation was it's still a relatively cheap source of protein that China will need, and that maybe 6, 8, maybe outside a year from now, that purchasing will reoccur and hopefully see some rebounding. Do you have any ideas on that type of trade going out that was holding our, supporting our prices here?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you helped me segue into my next discussion here. When we look at the long-term outlook, you're absolutely correct in that other countries need our food. They need protein. And can they do it all on their own? No, they cannot. So we're here in the United States. We're living in the breadbasket of the world. You know, there's the Ukraine and others, but we already have it, so we can supply those needs. So when we look at the long-term possibilities here, I think we're in a very, very good position to and we need to work on those markets and develop those. I was listening to a presentation just the other day, and his example was, if we're going to continue to keep buying electronic technology from China, he had been working with UPS on their 747s and their other jumbo jets. If they could fill those planes with fluid milk, and they use a bladder system, that's just, they're scheming and they're dreaming right now is what they're doing, and take those planes over, then they can transport a tremendous amount of product. It's just tons and hundreds of tons in one of these large planes. Get the plane over there, unload it, take the bladders down, fill it with the goods that they want to send us, bring it back to the United States, and in a few hours send it right back with another load of milk or other agricultural products. So we need to take our blinders off and think about those ideas. And of course, there are restrictions that we need to think about working on making changes, and I know that you can't do it all here at the state level, but you know, Colin Peterson and our senator, or hopefully senators, will be able to do something in the future. When we get back to the state of Minnesota, we have made a turnaround, and Kurt Zimmerman made comments on that later. You stole a little bit of my thunder, Kurt. But we're actually gaining cows and increasing milk production, and the producers out there are making changes. They're making changes because they want to be in the business long term. And it's not just the large producers. We have all parts of our industry that are making these changes. We have the organic grazing producers out there that are filling a need. You know, we have a market that's asking for them to produce that type of milk, and our producers are working hard to fulfill that need, and they're making changes, and they're learning and making changes in how they pasture cows and feed cows, and that's a very strong part of our dairy economy. Then we go to the small to medium-sized guys. Typically and traditionally, they were in stall barns. They're making changes. They're putting in low-cost parlors so that they can maybe save on their knees and make it so that it's something that's doable as they age or bring in the next generation, and maybe milk just a few more cows so they can bring in the son or the daughter. And then when we talk about our medium to large size herds, we're doing a lot of things that I think would blow away the green idea when we start talking about the Jerry and Linda Jennisons to put in the digester and the solid separator. If that isn't green, I don't know what is. You know, they're providing energy to their neighbors. And even the largest dairies are also doing that. The fairs at Morris, putting in digesters, solid separators, and trying to make their farms sustainable. And that's what we're seeing in our industry, is we want to be sustainable long-term. And not only sustainably, but I know that our producers want to be environmentally friendly, and we want to be significant contributors to our communities and to the state's economy. And when we make the changes and upgrades in our operations, we can do that. We live on our farms. We breathe the air, we drink the water, and we live in our communities. We want them to be better. So we just need to work together to make that happen. Now, Minnesota Milk's top priorities, environmental compliance. Two previous to me, or at least David Ward, commented on the 2010 feedlot deadline. There are ramifications to that. At Minnesota Milk Producers, we believe that there's no need to extend the deadline, and that's a point that we can all argue here. But we do believe that we need to have our state agencies on board, that if our producers are making significant efforts to come in compliance, as the dollars are available not only on their farms, but cost share dollars available from the state and federal government, that if they have that due diligence in place, that they will not be shut down. We would like that guarantee if the deadline is not extended. Many farms require a lot of dollars to make those changes. When we look at the history of our farms, where did our forefathers put the farms? They put it right next to a lake, right next to a river, because they needed to water their cows in the winter, and just, you know, maybe it was on a hillside so that they could get traffic in and out correctly, hay in the haymow. And so we have some obstacles to overcome on some of our oldest farms, and we can do that if we work together, but we are going to need some help to do that. We believe that it's not only the farmer's obligation to do that, but, you know, as we are trying to improve our air and water, that it's also a societal issue, that we need some help to do this, to get this done so it gets done faster. So working together, we can make this work. Permitting, and David Ward talked about this as well, it's the experience of our producers that modifying and expanding our feedlots is a difficult process in many areas of our state. We have different hoops that we have to jump through, and it's not that we're against doing that, it's just that we don't know the outcome, and that was stated earlier as well. So our producers would like to be able to come up with plans for sound expansions that will enhance the lifestyle of our producers. We need to make changes in our operations. Sometimes that means going in to get a permit. We may have to change cow numbers or change our buildings or do something. And we need to look at these as being a possibility of improving the animal care and sustaining our natural resources and improving the rural economy. This is a kind of a holistic thing that we need to look at. And so as we as producers go in for a permit, we need to have something that's clear and concise, and we know the outcome if we do what we are supposed to do on the farm. And also, it's my belief that we need to have something that's at a level to where the process can be professional. We have some people that think it should be close to home. Sometimes that can be too political. I've lived through some of that experience. And it's very, very difficult. We need to make sure that the process is at a professional level. And at a time of budget deficits, we should be streamlining this process as well. Let's not have multiple layers that it goes through, or at least streamline it if nothing else. Make it a permitting system that's fair and equitable to all parties involved, and is held at a government level, as I said before, or it's at a professional level. A livestock investment grant. We all worked very hard to get this passed through. I mean, you were key in doing this. We worked together for many years. We would hate to see this be diminished. And I'm going to reiterate some of what Kurt said before. And 576 producers sent in applications for the grant, you know, $150 million. I'm going to say that again. And we were only able to process 38 applicants. But over 900 jobs were added, and this is information that comes from the Department of Ag, that we need to make this happen. So how can we set a program that adds 900 jobs and actually makes our economy stronger? We can't do that. We need to fund this program. Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. What a success. This program has touched so many farms and so many people that we need to continue and fully fund this program. The Department of Ag states that that program last year had a $75 to $1 return on the state funds that were invested. The in-kind contributions from the rest of the industry totaled over $1 million through their, you know, working together to make our farmers successful. Statewide, there were 423 farms and 55,226 cows that had dairy profit teams, which is 9% of the farms in the state and 12% of the cows when we look at it. 3,303 farms participated in one or more educational programs provided by the dairy profit teams. These farms may or may have not had a dairy profit team, but this demonstrates the learning opportunities were above and beyond the team concept. As we look at where we're at in our dairy economy today, right now I would say that these teams are an absolute necessity to make sure our producers can manage through this crisis and manage into the future. Sometimes they're used to manage a crisis, sometimes it's used to make their farm better, sometimes it's to figure out where we're going to take it in the future. It's imperative that we keep this program fully funded. In summary, Mr. Chair, I'd like to say while we're currently in a downturn, we must not lose sight that Minnesota is a great place to dairy, that our Producers, their farms, and their cows are a major contributor to our economy, and by working together, we can move forward in an industry that is sustainable, renewable, and positive for our state. And before I turn it over for questions, I would like to introduce Sadie Frerich, and after she is done, we would like to take our questions at that point. Glenn and Sadie, her husband Glenn, are perfect examples of the impact of the Livestock Investment Grant and the Dairy Development and Profitability Teams. And we brought Sadie here today to tell you how it's impacted their lives, and we know that there are others on the state as well besides them that, that have had, it's had an impact on. So I'd like to introduce to you Sadie Frerich.
Thank you, Pat.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I don't know if you can hear me or not. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to share with you the story of basically how we got to be here, or how I got to be here. Glenn couldn't be with us today. He's at home attending to calving cows, and felt it would be, his time would be better, or best spent there. We have, we milk 50 cows on a small farm just outside of Melrose, Minnesota, in central Stearns County. We've been dairy farming for almost 4 years now. We met in college at the University of Minnesota and worked off the farm for several years after graduation before we had an opportunity to start farming. My father decided to discontinue his dairy enterprise in the spring of 2005 and offered us a chance to try our hand at dairy farming without any strings attached. So we sold our house in Cambridge and moved up to my dad's farm in Aiken, Minnesota, or Aiken County, Tamarack. We, after a year, decided that we could make this work, so we purchased his cows and his heifers. And then in August of 2006, 2 months later, we received an offer from some family friends back in Stearns County who needed someone to come work on their dairy while the farmer recovered from a brain injury. So with our first child on the way, we moved back to Stearns County, or I moved to Stearns County for the first time. Glenn moved back to Stearns County with our milk cows and our baby calves. In the spring of 2007, we started thinking about what we were our year of work at Hertz People for these family friends of ours. So we assembled the dairy profit team to help us map out our transition back to farming on our own. We also started looking for farms to rent, thinking that that would be our next step, that when we were done with our year as Hertz People, we would rent a farm until we could find one to buy and maintain our dairy that way. At our first dairy profit team meeting, our team made it very clear that our first choice should be purchasing a farm. I remember our new loan officer telling us that you should find 20 acres with a dairy site, a milking center, and some land nearby to rent for under $250,000. And we thought he was crazy because we'd been looking and there wasn't anything out there. We were surprised by the team's recommendation and thought it would be, the odds of finding that perfect farm would be pretty staggering. But we followed their advice and started looking for farms to purchase in addition to farms to rent if that didn't happen. Our dairy profit team also recommended that we apply for a dairy business planning grant at that time to help us proceed through the financial and the business management aspects of buying a farm or renting a farm and moving back to farming on our own. So we started that process as well. Within a month of that first meeting, we found exactly what we needed, a 20-acre farm site with a newer tie-stall barn, a nice house, and the option to rent the remaining 140 acres of land from the previous owner. Even better, the farm was located in the middle of a strong dairy community, just across the road from the farm where we had been working for the past year, and within a couple of miles of my husband's family. The for sale sign on that farm had greeted us each day as we drove into Sulzel's yard, but we had never considered buying the farm because we didn't think farm ownership was an option for us until that first profit team meeting. Our dairy profit team continued to help us work through the transition process as we purchased the farm. The team met with us to walk through the farm and help plan for the physical transition of ourselves and our cattle to the farm. And our farm business management instructor helped us prepare the financial information needed by our loan officers to proceed with the purchase. In July of 2007, the purchase was finalized and we moved ourselves and our cows and our heifers and everybody to the farm. We were awarded a dairy business planning grant and used those funds to define our operation and financial plans for the new farm. And we found the process of developing that business plan very helpful in terms of identifying the strengths and weaknesses of our operation in light of our new location and also setting goals for improvement. I can honestly tell you that without our dairy profit team and our planning grants, I wouldn't be sitting in front of you today as a farm owner. We'd probably still be renting a farm somewhere, and I really don't like to think about what we would have done if we hadn't found a farm. Purchasing the farm was a dream come true for us, but it was also good for our local economy. The farm we bought could easily have been bought by a non-farm purchase buyer, and that non-farm buyer would not have had nearly the economic impact we have. In January of 2008, we began an assortment of farm improvement projects. We installed long day lighting in the barn. We put mattresses underneath the cows in the stalls, replaced exhaust fans and bought a TMR mixer and feed conveyor, and installed a plate cooler to help reduce our electricity needs. We knew when we bought the farm that there were manure lagoon and feedlot issues. So in October, we started a comprehensive manure management project to correct those issues. We replaced the farm stacking pit with an up-to-code manure lagoon, and constructed diversions to keep feedlot runoff out of the pond we share with our neighbors. I'm one of those farms who founders built the farm right next to the pond. The pond is just outside the back door of the barn. These improvement projects resulted in more business for a number of local dealerships and contractors, and have allowed us to be better stewards of our farm's natural resources. The environmental benefits of these improvements will continue long into the future. We applied for a livestock investment grant to help recover some of the dollars we invested in these projects. In October, we were notified that our grant application would be funded. I was so excited, I did cartwheels all the way out to the barn to tell Glenn. The investments we made in our farm played a big role in making 2008 a successful year for us. Our farm generated nearly $250,000 in economic activity, above and beyond those that we invested in capital projects. These dollars went to the feed mill, the equipment sales dealership, the local grocery store, and many other businesses, such as Mr. Zimmerman listed for you. Some of those are ours, sir. When we receive our livestock investment grant funds in 2009, we will utilize those grant dollars, along with the continued guidance of our dairy profit team, to keep our business moving forward through the low milk prices of the next several months. I believe that full funding for the dairy profitability and enhancement program is essential. And again, as I mentioned earlier, I don't believe I would be sitting here in front of you had it not been for our dairy profit team and our dairy business planning grant. The livestock investment grant was extremely helpful as well. 10% lower costs for the improvements we made mean we will be able to make additional improvements 10% sooner than we had without the livestock investment grant. Thank you for hearing my story today, and thank you for investing in Minnesota's dairy industry and young producers like myself.
Thanks for coming and sharing your story, and I got a couple of questions for you Mr. Luneman. First of all, we don't often see folks your age here before the committee. Not that I don't love you guys in the audience, but what is the average age of the dairy farmer in Minnesota today? What would you guess?
Oh, I would say it has to be in the upper 40s. I'm guessing. I've seen it before, but
okay.
I don't know that I can answer that.
So again, what we're looking for are ways to pass on. Can you, for people that are new to the dairy profitability team, that might be new on the committee or in the audience, can you tell us who is on that team? Just give us a little background on who the members were on that team, what they did, and what their roles were.
Our team is composed of, I have to list them, we have 8 members on our team, which is probably on the larger side, but our veterinarian, our nutritionist, our crop consultant, our 2 loan officers, our farm business management instructor, the field rep from our milk cooperative, and Sarah Rarick, who is the coordinator for the Central Minnesota Dairy Profit Team. So those eight people come together, and we met last week for our spring meeting, and we go over the goals that we've set for the farm, the progress we've made on those goals, our nutritionist reports on how we feel things are going with the cows production-wise, our veterinarian gives us feedback on how we're doing with herd health, our loan officers review, and our farm business management instructor together. With them, we review our financial standing, our balance sheet, our projected cash flows, and our financial analysis for the previous year. And basically, we talk about, you know, where we're going with our farm business and where we've been, and how we can continue to move forward and meet the goals that we've set.
How often do you meet with these groups?
It depends. For us, it depends on what's going on. When we were moving and transitioning to the new farm, we met four times through the course of a year. I think three is a more realistic number for us, 2 to 3 times a year, when we're kind of in status quo. If we, when we can move forward with our plans to improve our farm's labor situation, meaning either installing a robot or a parlor, then we will convene the group more often to help answer our questions and make plans.
Is there a cost to you?
Yes, but the return is it's nominal. We pay $200 a year to enroll in the Central Minnesota Dairy Profit Team. In return, we receive $700 that we can use towards consulting fees. For us, we use that to help pay our farm business management tuition.
And so then you'll decide how long you'll be in it. It's a yearly thing, and you'll decide annually whether you continue this, or once you feel comfortable on your own, or how are you going to make that decision?
We decide annually, but we are limited to enrollment for 3 years.
Okay.
And then we are required to either take a break, or when the situation arises that you are changing your operation or doing something new, then you can reapply to enroll. In addition to the $700 that we receive for consultant fees, we receive $300 in technical service money or technical improvement money that we can use to purchase computers or farm technology to help us run our business better.
So, members, these are some of the decisions that we're going to have to do as a committee to prioritize and understand what we want to do. On page 16, what's been proposed is dairy development program reduced from $1.005 million a year to $505,000 per year. So it's basically cut in half. And obviously, as a committee, we're going to be asking all of you to put priorities together for this budget. By the way, that $500,000 then was carried over into what's called, at this point anyway, the Ag 21 Fund, which can be used for multiple things, including livestock investment grants and next-gen energy grants. So, I mean, you know, next-gen was envisioned to be a $9 million a year type thing, and livestock investment grants, a similar amount. So we've got probably $18 million, $20 million of need, and we've plugged $500,000 into that hole for the next 2 years. So it's pretty incredible when you think about it, and we're really going to have to have some bright eyes and some good ideas coming through this committee to try and understand what we want to do with this in the future. So, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it Ms. Fredericks?
Fredericks.
Thank you for your story. It's fantastic, and share that with as many people as you possibly can, and I encourage anybody in agriculture and animal agriculture to do the same. And one thing on your labor issue, you could have more children, but, you know.
I'm just teasing.
Nobody's brought this up yet, but I want yourself to respond, if you would, please. On the issue of outside influences, telling farmers how they should care for their animals, how they should feed, house, treat, transport, Proposition 2 passed out in California. And to me, being a producer as well, that's scary. And I'd just like your input on that, if you would, please.
Thanks, Fred.
I've said before that there are as many ways to milk cows as there are dairy farms in our state and probably in our nation. The consumers want more say or feel they have more say in how we operate our farms, and that I think is not something that's going to change. What I feel we need to do as producers is continue telling our stories and bringing people to our farms and showing them that everything we do for our animals is in their best interest. That, I mean, we're farmers. I'm a farmer because I love animals. It's not because I'm here to turn a dollar. I could make a lot more money doing other things, but I'm a farmer because I love my animals. And the more we tell consumers, the more we share that message with consumers, the more we can keep their trust that what we're doing with our animals and with our farms is in the best interest of both consumers and animals and agriculture.
Farms and animals.
Thank you for that as well, because you're absolutely right. But you're one person. I'm one person. Mm-hmm. You know, we all need to share our stories and continue to do that. Otherwise, we're going to be forced to make changes that aren't for the best interest. And so thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Any other questions, members, from anyone or comments? Representative Anderson. I assume this is your constituent, too, and you get the money, you have the people coming in. It's pretty good for a freshman.
It's a good day.
Yeah.
Good day. Katie, appreciate your story, but my question actually goes to Pat. Now, I haven't followed the markets like I used to since I've been down here, and the last time I guess I checked, the futures price of milk for February was like $9 a hundred. Looking ahead 6-8 months, what do the future prices tell us for milk down the road?
Mr. Luneman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the futures are showing that there will be some improvement. We're seeing some 12, 13, 14 down the road, but you have to remember that those are only futures markets, and that unless you exercise using those futures, that doesn't mean that that's what we will get paid in those months. So that's just looking ahead, that's people and marketers, producers are thinking that that's where it will be.
Representative Anderson.
No, it does give a bit of an indication of what the forecast to be coming up down the road, but yeah, I agree with you.
If I could add one more comment.
Yes, please.
Remember that I said that our costs these days for a typical producer are somewhere in that $15 to $16, maybe $17 per hundredweight. So if we're looking at a $13 or $14 futures, that's still not adequate unless other costs come in line.
Okay, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Luneman, Congressman Tim Walz is urging Ag Secretary Vlasic to release Section 32 funds to purchase surplus milk and milk products, and I'm wondering if Minnesota Milk has a position on that and what effect you think that might have here in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Luneman.
We actually had dialogue with Mr. Walz just a week ago on that very issue, and they were asking us what could be done. And we have support prices that the government can step in and purchase products at certain prices. However, in order for our processors to sell to the government, they need to change their labeling, they need to change packaging, just a number of things that they need to do. And so what happens is that the market ends up lower than what the support price is before the processors can afford to sell to the government. So we urged Representative Walz to tell USDA, the administration, that we do need to implement the programs that they have at their disposal, and it be to buy up these products and maybe to change some of the language that they have and how they're packaged, graded, and different things like that, so that maybe we would gain a few cents per pound of cheese or powder or whatever back. And also to look at the dairy export incentive program, which kind of has been on mothballs for the last few years, to reopen that and any other
avenue that they may have to help support prices in this period.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Lumen and Ms. Frerichs, I just want to say thank you very much for coming down and testifying. I did take the opportunity this weekend to contact my farm business manager in my area because I know how important the Dairy Development Profitability Program has been in southeastern Minnesota, and so I just asked for kind of a personal opinion on whether or not we should allow the Department of Agriculture to come forward with a recommendation to reduce the funding for the Dairy Development and Profitability Program. And then also kind of ask the question of either or. And so I'm going to ask that of the two of you. And the reason is that, you know, we face a pretty substantial deficit in the state of Minnesota. We're going to have to be making some tough decisions in the end. Hopefully, we could fund both the Livestock Investment Grant Program and the Dairy Development Profitability Program. But if we cannot, and it comes down to an either-or situation, which one would you rather have?
You want to answer that?
No, I do not. We were afraid that that question would come forward today. And we're just going to make a statement today that we believe both the Livestock Investment Grant and the Dairy Development Program should be fully funded. We're going to leave it at that for today. We believe those programs are so important to our industry and for the dollars returned on investment that we don't know how the state can get these programs.
One couple things and we'll get you all on your way. Again, I want to thank you too. One of the success stories that this committee, this legislature, and the governor are going to continue this year is putting money in and buying fresh milk for our food shelves. That's been a real important partnership that we've had that started, I believe, when David was sitting here and in this spot, and it continues now with this group. And again, in the past, we were giving dated milk to the food shelves, and you can imagine a kid or even an adult trying to, when it's just starting to turn, to drink that. We weren't creating a good, I don't think, image for milk. And with the monies we've been putting forward along with the administration, we're going to be able to, I think, continue that program this year. I think that's critical for us. So that's a feather in the hat of the milk producers to another to have supported that along the way. And then I just want to say thank you to, you know, I started here, I was elected in 96, and then I sat the next 2 years in this committee with Chairman Wenzel at that time. And what we talked about in dairy meetings every year was the number of farms we were losing, how many cows we were losing, how much production we were losing in this state every week. And to see now the last few years that message turn around and talk about increased cow numbers and people starting new dairy farms in the state and the support we're seeing, I think, from the legislature and others for programming that enhances that we've talked about today, I do think is critical. You know, and again, I'll keep stating it because, like Representative Hamilton says, we have to tell our story. Agriculture is one of the few things the last couple of years that's been working in this state. Even though your prices are down now, we've made some money the last 2 years and we've helped this economy. And, you know, if we look beyond the end of our nose, we want to keep you strong and keep you churning this economy out in Minnesota, outstate, but also here in the metro, people need to realize 15 or 20% of this state's gross domestic product is agriculture related. And so I don't think it's the time either to back off on that. And I think, in fact, we should be very bullish in what we do in here to promote our budget and the programs that help enhance our livestock folks, our crops folks, our specialty folks, everyone who's participating in that. So I want to thank you for coming. We'll probably ask you to come back as we get into some of our budget stuff. And I know Bob, is he still here somewhere? Oh, yeah, there he is. He's hiding in the back, but you have a good executive director who's at the Capitol all the time and in the halls, and maybe too much, Hamilton says at some point. But that's why we're successful, and that's why you're successful. So there's no other business before the committee. Thank you again, and meeting is adjourned.